great after being out late, walking my baby back home. Arm in arm over meadow and farm, walking my baby back home.
I think singing is very personal and much more so than instrumentals. It's kind of the humanity wrapped up in a whole little package.
Let's take it nice and easy. It's gonna be so easy for us to fall in love.
It's all about the spoken word. And it's difficult for an instrumentalist to really pinpoint that which he or she is trying to portray. It may sound good, it may sound lovingly, but it doesn't say love necessarily. It's a totally different thing.
With these hands, I will cling to you.
When a horn player puts his horn down and suddenly surprises us by singing a chorus of the song he's just played, it's quite charming. And if you encourage them enough, then they start doing it a lot, which is really wonderful.
Yes, what good is sitting alone in the room? Come hear the music play.
I think everybody likes singing. It feels good to your body. And there's an enjoyment that's there. And that's part of the magic, I think, that becomes hypnotic even to the singer. When singers start to sing, they fall in love with themselves.
You wanna get me, I said, you know, it's all about, yeah. You wanna be gay, so you make out.
Rough and raspy, sweet and smooth, rich and deep. Their voices are as varied as the music they make. They can be funny, charming, touching, or romantic. How they sing is an echo of how they play. If a musician can sing through his instrument, chances are he can do it with his voice. I'm Nancy Wilson. In this edition of Jazz Profiles, we're celebrating jazz in song, singing instrumentalists.
Jazz musicians, when they sing, they're obviously entrenched in the jazz rules, the jazz sense of time, the jazz sense of texture, the jazz sense of swing, a capacity for the blues.
Jazz writer Will Friedwald.
You know, when they switch over to singing, you know, they're already well-versed in it in terms of the instrumental instrument as opposed to the vocal instrument. So it definitely gives them an advantage.
Singer and lyricist John Hendricks.
The best scat singers are instrumentalists, Dizzy, Clark Terry, these guys are really wonderful scat singers. And of course, there's the originator, Louis Armstrong. You know, he scatted just like he played the horn.
Singer Carol Sloan.
I think that we knew that Oscar was going to sound lyrical and beautiful. Turns out he does, and that's just the way he played. It's a reflection of how they play, is how they sing, for sure.
Little girl, you're the one girl for me. Little girl, you're as sweet as can be. Just a glance at you meant love from the start. Oh, what a thrill came into my heart. Little girl, with your cute little ways, I'm yours for the rest of my days. And this great big world will be divine, little girl, when you're mine, all mine.
Lyricist and writer Gene Lees.
When you're training in jazz, they tell you to sing the line you're playing. because Oscar Peterson's playing absolutely breathes, and it's because he's thinking vocal phrasing. You can almost hear the intake of breath between the phrases.
When we say that a musician sings like he plays, we mean that he phrases the same way. And when we say that he plays with vocal phrasing, we mean that he groups notes together according to the lyrics, like a singer does.
Because the material of jazz is the song form, and in that era, we had a magnificent body of American song, and if you sat down and learned the song, you probably knew the lyrics. Lester Young insisted that musicians should know the lyrics.
John Hendricks.
He'd say, well, how can you play a song if you don't know the words? And every young jazz musician heard that, and they took that to heart. John Coltrane made an album of ballads. You can hear that he knows the words to all those songs. When he played Nancy with the Laughing Face, you know he knew.
I think musicians, well, most of them anyway, I hope, would pay attention to the lyric. And the ones that love to sing are the ones that pay the most attention to the lyric.
Carol Sloan.
Red Mitchell was a fine bass player. He also loved to sing. And then Jack Sheldon, of course, has been singing for a long time. And Warren Vaché. I thought about Dottie Dodgen. Dottie plays drums, and she likes to sing. And, of course, Grady Tate is a wonderful drummer, singer. Woody Herman loved to sing. And George Shearing, and then Lester Young. The list is kind of a long one when we start thinking about it. Jimmy Rolls loved to sing, and he had that really gravelly voice, you know. Many times I know some producers who were said, well, look, Jimmy, maybe we're not going to let you do a vocal track, which was, he was very disappointed. He loved to sing.
When the rains are through in springtime, there's a riot of color around me. And the fresh green grass, the trees, the flowers make the morning lovely. Though it might not last a lifetime, we will feel today the right time. For the fresh green grass, the trees, the flowers make our morning lovely.
The vocal quality is not always really so very, very important. I mean, it's lovely if you have great equipment and a great instrument and you were blessed with that. But if you're not and you still love to sing, I mean, as long as you're singing in tune and you have some musicality, then the sound of the voice is a very minor factor, let's say.
No matter what the quality of their voice, musicians can touch audiences when they sing. They know how to interpret a song with feeling.
Because the sound of the human voice is a little extra connection with the listener and the audience member.
Radio host and educator, Alisa Clancy.
It bridges the gap even a little bit more between the musician and the singer. And they did it flawlessly, too. I mean, these guys, you know, they feel so much more comfortable being inside the music. Sometimes singers that are not instrumentalists and maybe don't have the musical background that some of the others have, can't get inside. They can't get inside.
Two of the most influential pioneers of jazz were Fats Waller and Louis Armstrong. They made their first recordings in the 1920s. Neither had what you'd call a good voice, yet both were great singers. What they had was a passion for entertaining audiences. And in those early days of jazz, singing was an important part of a musician's act.
Fats Waller is widely prized as probably the greatest clown in the history of jazz, with the possible exception of Louis Armstrong.
Will Friedwald.
The major difference is that Fats Waller's career was so short. He died at age 39, and incredibly prolific, considering that he lived such a short time. He was just had this amazing capacity for entertaining people, and whether he was doing it as a singer and whether he was doing it as a piano player, it was almost immaterial, because his ability to tickle an audience, to make an audience laugh, was just so deep.
Everybody get a basket, yeah! I said basket. Well, all right, sir. Trucking on down the avenue without a single thing to do. Kept on trucking all around. When she spotted on the ground, she took it, the little yellow basket. And if she doesn't bring it back, I think that I shall die. Was it red?
No, no.
Was it green?
No, no.
Was it blue?
No, no.
No, just little yellow basket. Yes, get that basket fixed.
While Fats Waller was entertaining audiences in New York, Louis Armstrong was establishing trumpet traditions in New Orleans.
All the New Orleans guys could take a chorus, and when they couldn't remember the lyrics to the chorus, they'd scat along.
Alisa Clancy.
That's an old New Orleans tradition. And all those guys, men and women that came out of New Orleans, were singers. Louis Armstrong, Louis Prima, Red Allen, even Bunny Berrigan and Jack Teagarden. Hot Lips Page, all those guys that were singing in the 20s and 30s could sing, and they were very good singers, too. They just never made a living just singing. It was just kind of part of the craft of jazz. You just include a vocal. And if you didn't do it, you know, you didn't really become a star.
Yes, what good is sitting alone in the room? Come hear the music play. Life is a cabaret, oh chum, so come to the cabaret.
Trumpeter Clarke Taylor recalls some sage advice he got from Louis Armstrong, whom he affectionately calls Pops.
I'll never forget the last time Dizzy and I used to go and visit with him. We lived in the same neighborhood. So we'd get together, Dizzy and I said, let's go over and bug Pops. Okay. So we'd meet and ring the bell. Pops said, come in. So he said, Pops, we'd always tell him we came to get our batteries charged. So he said, all right, sit down there. I'm going to give you the history of jazz. So he'd talk a while. Then he said to me, he said, I like your playing, Daddy. He said, you play good. And I just wanted to tell you one thing, though. You got to sing more. I said, sing? He said, yep, you got to sing. He said, people like trumpet playing, he said, but they like singing better. He said, besides, it's good for your chops.
Whether he sang to improve his chops, to entertain the audience, or simply to take a break, Louis Armstrong brought all the mastery of his instrument to his singing. His voice was an extension of his trumpet. Clarke Terry demonstrates Armstrong's singing style.
Oh, Pearson Street, Dublin, is the street on red. We're all kinds of people go around and meet. Greatest example right there. The way he played, he sang. And I understand that his scat singing and so forth was a result of a mishap. He forgot the lyrics or something, and he started just filling in, you know.
Yes, Basin Street is a street where the folks, they all meet down in New Orleans, the land of dreams, by their birds, by overboos and in. Yes, this Bobby Sosa's hand.
Louis Armstrong singing Basin Street Blues. I'm Nancy Wilson, and you're listening to Jazz and Song, Singing Instrumentalists, on NPR's Jazz Profiles. Jack Teagarden sang through his trombone, and when he did sing, it was an echo of his playing. Jack started out about the same time as Louis Armstrong and was considered a superb trombonist and a very appealing singer.
I got a heart that's broken-hearted. How do I mend it? People have said you find romance in other embraces. But if your mood is dreamy and you care to see me, meet me where they play the blues.
Jack Teagarden was an extremely capable singer.
Will Friedwald.
When he played, he had such a distinctive vocal timbre in the sound of his trombone. I mean, he could really make it moan and shout. His trombone sounded exactly like his voice, and conversely, his voice sounded exactly like his trombone. And when he expressed himself, either vocally or instrumentally, he was reaching down to the same place in the heart.
Like Louis Armstrong and Jack Teagarden, Chet Baker was an excellent singer. He played trumpet in an understated way, in a style known as cool, and he vocalized the same way.
He tended to play in a very minimal style. It was not about a lot of hitting, a lot of high, a lot of flashy notes, a lot of fast runs and stuff like that. He played very simply and sincerely, but with great emotion, with great power. And then when he sang, you know, he was able to get a kind of intimacy into his voice that was very appealing.
Is your figure less than Greek? Is your mouth a little weak? When you open it to speak, are you smart? But don't change your hair for me. Not if you care for me. Stay, little Valentine. Stay.
Whereas Chet Baker played a cool trumpet, other trumpet players took a different approach. Though they were serious about the music, they clowned around on stage and sang novelty tunes.
When you listen to Clark, Clark is talking through his horn.
Pianist Norman Simmons.
The culture of trumpet playing has a humor to it. If you listen to just the notes and think of it that way, there is a humor to trumpet playing. I think that novelty songs and stuff like that is just something that trumpet players get attracted to.
Clark Terry's singing style is so unique that it earned him his nickname, Mumbles. Clark explains how he acquired his strange singing style.
In my hometown, St. Louis, there were lots of bars and dens of iniquity, whatever you want to call it, where they had a piano. And it usually was an upright piano, which was the top of which was triply laminated to withstand the weight of several steins of beer. And if you bought a beer for the piano player, he would have to play for you so you could sing. And everybody wanted to sing. So many times, that's the way they would sound. They would decide they're going to sing about the way they wanted their eggs cooked. And after the first sentence was uttered, it was very highly unintelligible, you know. So they might say, I want my eggs in the morning.
You
want to get
me?
I said,
you know, it's all about.
Clark can even mumble in other languages.
If you've traveled, as I have, you learn to get the sound of the ways and inflections that are used in the delivery of the languages in other countries. Like, for instance, I might mumble in Japanese, I say, you know, or if I was to mumble in in Swedish, they say, Ja, det är min, det går, det är mycket bra, det kan ni ha, det bara. Och jag talar, vilket är det inte min då? Och då hänger jag igen någon gång. Det var lite franskt, det filmar så. Och if it's German. Aktion, man, faller med att hänga, hänga! Det var rids på det hängs, för det flings, på det hon vill hänga hon, för det kommer laus.
Jack Sheldon has carried the tradition of trumpeter even further. He's performed as a comic actor in movies and television. Acting, playing, or singing, Jack is the comedian.
You and only you. No, no. You stretch out of you.
Jack's sense of humor, I think, comes through his horn.
Alisa Clancy.
Sometimes to the dismay of the audience, because sometimes he hits wrong notes, meaning, you know, in his sense of humor, I think. But definitely a part of an era, a hip era, you know, the Mort Sauls of jazz, you know, where they were kind of comedian guys.
One of the greatest entertainers in jazz was trumpeter Dizzy Gillespie. Dizzy helped usher in a new musical style that revolutionized jazz in the mid-40s and early 50s. You didn't dance to bebop so much as you listened to it. Though Dizzy was serious about music, he was an irrepressible jokester on stage. Will Friedwald.
The interesting thing is that when Dizzy Gillespie comes up, he's sort of the dividing point between the idea of, you know, jazz as strictly pop music, jazz as party music, and the point from which it sort of became after Dizzy, which is jazz as a concert music, jazz as a very serious art music, jazz that could be played in symphony halls and philharmonic and be taken seriously as a musical art form. And that aspect of him was not really followed up by a lot of modern jazz musicians. That whole clowning thing that Dizzy had that was so very much came out of Louis Armstrong and Fats Waller. And in Dizzy's book, he talks about how much Louis Armstrong and Fats Waller meant to him. And singing is, it's a word that barely does justice to Dizzy's entertaining because he, you know, he would tell jokes, he would get up and dance, he would have these long sort of musical monologues and incorporate all that into a typical set.
Swing low, sweet Cadillac, only for to carry me home. That I see coming for to carry me home. Oh, an El Dorado coming after me. Coming for to carry me home.
When Dizzy recorded Swing Low, Sweet Cadillac in 1967, he had a talented young saxophone player in the band by the name of James Moody. His improvised interpretation of I'm in the Mood for Love is a jazz classic. After Eddie Jefferson added lyrics, it became Moody's theme song.
There I go, there I go, there I go, there I go, there I go. Pretty baby, you are the soul that snaps my control. Such a funny thing, but every time you're near me, I never can behave. You give me a smile and then I'm locked up in your magic. There's music all around me, crazy music, music that keeps calling me so. Very close to you, turns me your slave.
Me, I sing, but I'm not a singer. I'm not a singer, and I don't have the control over my voice that I do over my instrument, my horn. I feel more comfortable playing the instrument, but that doesn't mean that I can't hold a tune. Whatever I can play, I can sing it.
You know, there's no way you're going to be able to make an audience have fun unless you're having fun yourself.
Will Friedwald.
James Moody and Jack Sheldon absolutely both come from that same concept. They both grew up, you know, hearing Louis Armstrong and the other great sort of swing era musician singers, and they both have irrepressible senses of humor and the way they express it, in addition to their playing, because there's a lot of humor strictly in their playing. But in their singing, you know, they just know, just the same way that Moody, you know, knows there's a point in the show when the audience wants to hear him sing something silly. And again, he comes very much out of Dizzy Gillespie. He was practically Dizzy's right-hand man. And he has that same sense of antic wit. If it's Moody, it's going to be entertaining.
Pianist Les McCann is another musician who just wants to entertain audiences.
Every night I get on that bandstand, I'm looking to do something different, whether I be singing it, playing it, or sharing something with my band that we didn't do the day before, the night before, the moment before. My writing is what I love about myself. They know that I'm not going to do the same thing every time they come. I might sit there and talk for an hour. Want to hear me sing? I've got that too. But I like to play. I like to have fun.
I love the night and I the love. I'm hanging on, we push and shove. Possession is the motivation that is hanging up the goddamn nation. Looks like we always end up in a rut. Everybody now trying to make it real compared to what.
Compared to What, which was recorded in 1969, became a big hit. More recently, Les has started to sing in a more romantic vein.
With these hands, I will cling to you. Singing has just come into my life in the last 10 years, where I got, when I say I accepted it, I did it early in my career because my record company, they loved my voice, and we made a few records then. What I'm trying to say is this is recently where me, Mr. McCann here, took it and said, hey, this is mine, that's why I got it, and I'm using it, damn it. With these hands, I will bring a tender love as warm as May.
Just ahead, the singing musicians who became so popular as vocalists that people forgot they also played an instrument. I'm Nancy Wilson, and you're listening to Jazz Profiles, a tribute to singing instrumentalists on NPR, National Public Radio. Since the early days of jazz, musicians from trumpet players to bass players have included singing as part of their entertainment. Maybe because it's easier, more piano players sing than any other kind of jazz musician. Sarah Vaughan, Dinah Washington, and Carmen McRae started out at the piano, but moved away from it after they became established as singers. Nat King Cole was a major jazz pianist before he became a singing star.
The singing destroyed him as a pianist.
Lyricist and writer Gene Lees.
It got so successful and so popular, and he made so much money from it, that eventually he dropped his trio and stayed the rest of his life as a stand-up singer.
G is great after being out late, walking my baby back home.
arm in arm over meadow and farm, walking my baby back home.
Jazz writer Will Friedwald.
Nat King Cole is sort of the most extreme example of a great singer that it's generally forgotten that he could play piano at all. And to a certain degree, I always got the impression that certain of Cole's star piano players that came along after him, such as Oscar Peterson and Errol Garner, I always had a latent suspicion that they sort of had the talent to sing, but they sort of didn't want to become the next Nat Cole. I mean, they didn't want people to accuse them of, you know, aping Nat Cole and trying to start a second career. And they also didn't want to give up playing the piano. They just enjoyed it too much.
Diana Krall seems to be following Nat King Cole's path. When she started out, she had a trio in the Nat Cole tradition, and in fact, did a tribute album to him. Like Nat, she has become extremely popular as a singer, and is rarely viewed as a jazz pianist.
They've marketed her as a singer.
Radio host and educator, Alisa Clancy.
And of course, she studied with Jimmy Rolls, and Jimmy Rolls is the one that said, you know, you ought to sing a little bit. And I think people are surprised when they see what a fantastic piano player she is, and that that's how she started, with the lush strings and emphasizing her voice and de-emphasizing her piano playing. I mean, because she's a very attractive product, as well as being a very attractive and gifted pianist and singer. And so, you know, marketers can make a lot of money with Diana Krall as a crossover artist.
Looking for the light of a new love to brighten up the night. I have you, love, and we can face the music together, dancing.
Like Nat Cole and Diana Krall, Shirley Horn started out as a serious pianist, but became better known for her singing. But she remains rooted to her piano. Her accompaniment is a major part of her vocal performance.
Let's take it nice and easy. It's gonna be so easy. For us to fall in love. Hey, baby, what's your hurry? Relax and please don't worry. We're gonna fall in love.
Alisa Clancy.
It's seamless when Shirley goes from playing to singing and back. She's always been a singer. And people would be surprised, I think, to watch her play piano sometimes.
Diana Krall and Shirley Horn are only a few of the many women singer pianists. In the jazz world, women have been mostly singers or piano players, and often both.
Pianists often sing, and there are so many women, because it was acceptable to sit behind the piano and sing. And Nina Simone, Barbara Carroll, Sarah Vaughan, Carmen McRae, all starting as instrumentalists, and then probably working a club, and somebody comes along and says, you know, you need to sing. You know, we got to get people in here, and if you're just playing piano, it's not going to be worth it. So, you know, sing a little bit.
Will Friedwald.
There's a whole school of lady pianist singers from who were popular during the 1940s that recorded very frequently. There was Julia Lee, Nellie Letcher, Rose Murphy, Hatta Brooks. In a sense, they're sort of like Fats Waller in a dress, and that you have that sense of irreverence, you have that sense of fun, and you know, that gift for comedy, which it seems very directly related to Fats Waller's. But of course, they're all, you know, as different from Waller as they are from each other.
Dorothy Donegan was probably more like Fats Waller than any of them. She was a consummate entertainer. Alisa Clancy.
I've always thought of her as a comedian. She really cultivated her sense of humor in concert because she couldn't really get a giant record contract. In the 40s and 50s, if you weren't a stunning-looking babe, you know, and Dorothy, She always said, you know, she looked like a horse with a hat on, you know. And so she cultivated the humorous side of piano playing. I mean, she could do impressions. I mean, that was so funny.
Miss Eartha Kitt. Say, she bones. Save sea bones for Henry Jones. Cause he don't like no meat. Pearl Bailey. Yes, he does too, honey. And what string is that you're playing? The G, G, don't pull it too tight. Miss Billie Holiday.
Not much to look at. Nothing to see.
Whereas singing piano players are common, singing just drummers are rare. Living. But there are some.
Buddy Rich was actually a pretty good singer. Mel Torme started out, you know, as a vaudevillian, sort of a vaudeville guy. He could do anything. He was a singer, he was a drummer, he was a dancer. And then singing became, you know, much more important. But Mel was also a drummer, singer. And Dottie Dodgen is one I think of.
With me, I felt a lot more comfortable playing for myself. I always say I'm my favorite drummer when I sing because I never rush me or drag me, you know.
Dottie Dodgen started out as a singer, but then she fell in love with the drums. She has played drums with Benny Goodman, Ruby Braff, Zoot Sims, and other jazz giants. She has begun to sing again.
When I went to New York, you were either a singer or you were a drummer. The guys in those days, they didn't want to hear about a singer who played a little drums or a drummer who sang a little. I mean, it was really survival for me to choose. I played drums for so long, and I missed the melodic end, I really did. Now I do both, but I'm getting more and more into singing, and I find it a lot more fascinating than before. I just kind of did it before, but I'm having a lot of fun with that. Life is good.
Now it seems to me that we have stood talked just like this before. We looked at each other in the same way then, but I can't remember where or when. And so it seems that we have met before. Yes, we might have laughed before, maybe even loved before, but who knows? Who could possibly know? Who knows? Well, when bonny, well, when somebody who do be
Grady Tate is another drummer who sings. Unlike Dottie, he does not sing from the drums. In fact, he would like to get away from the drums entirely.
I'm more happy singing than playing. To me, it's more revealing of exactly how I feel, because with a lyric, I can let you know. I can tell you how I feel. And therein lies the reason that I'm enjoying it more and more and more.
You go to my head like a sip of sparkling burgundy brew, and I find the very mention of you like a summer with a thousand Julys. You intoxicate my soul with your eyes, and I'm certain that this this heart of mine hasn't a ghost of a chance in this crazy romance. You go to my head.
Grady Tate, singing You Go to My Head, recorded in 1991 on Milestone Records. I'm Nancy Wilson, and you're listening to Jazz in Song, Singing Instrumentalists, on NPR's Jazz Profiles. Drummer balladeers, piano-playing singers, and singing horns. All kinds of musicians sing, even bass players. Singer Carol Sloan.
Something about watching a bass player sing while he's playing the bass. It's a little bit like rubbing your hand on your head and on your stomach at the same time. Well, Jay has got it down. He doesn't look awkward. And I like his work, and I love his original music. I think it's very interesting and very off the wall a bit.
Jay Leonhardt was strongly influenced by pianist-composer Dave Frischberg. Like Dave, he sings his own compositions.
Frischberg, sure. Well, he's a major influence on me. When I first came to New York, he was still playing jazz around town. He and Bob Dorough had written some songs which were extremely clever and fun, and I loved them. I mean, I was instantly attracted to the things that they wrote.
You tend to gain a new appreciation for the Earth's rotation in the middle of the night. And here in northern latitudes, you get strange attitudes from people living in the endless light. So I suppose...
My material is a little bit more personal than Frischberg's is. I take more chances. The one that I did last night was about taking a bass on a plane. And if you really want to cause some trouble, if you really want to cause some pain, then simply go down to your local airport and try to put a bass aboard a plane. And it sort of exaggerates some of the problems that you run into, and the people are horrified by the size of the thing and they can't stand it. And so it gets a laugh, and it's fun, and it's a pure example of right out of my life where songs are written. And often it's just the stuff of life. You know.
She says, that will never fit aboard an airplane. It's just too large, it's just too big. You thank her, but she does not think you're funny. To her, you're just another sexist pig. So she panics and she calls her supervisor, who sees the bass and goes into a swoon. The ticket they decide on for the plane you want to ride on costs more than a ticket to the moon. Now this is not the time for getting angry. This is not the time to cause a scene. This is when you must turn into Gandhi, suddenly so passive and serene. Or better yet, be Obi-Wan Kenobi. Use the Force to get them into line. Tell them, do not worry about the bass, it will be no problem. Let the bass pass through, it will be fine.
New on the scene is another singing bassist, Jim Ferguson. He was also strongly influenced by Dave Frischberg.
And I guess, again, I'm tipping my hat to Mose Allison and Dave Frischberg and guys who've written songs like that over the years that are clever and humorous and sometimes politically poignant. So I'm trying to press myself into writing more serious lyrics as well. Sometimes I think the comedy is easier, at least for me. Woke up one morning about 6 a.m. with that thing going around my head, and I literally couldn't go back to sleep because I tried. And I got up and wrote it in about 15 minutes. It starts out, thought I'd be hip and take a trip.
To seek a mystic out in Kathmandu. But this old man, he was talking language I don't parlez-vous. I must be too old for new age, but I'm too young for old age. Now what's a guy supposed to do? Went on a date, her name was Kate. Deep into Zen reincarnation too. I can't remember last week, much less a former life or two. I must be too old for new age, but I'm too young for old age. Now what's a guy supposed to do?
Jim Ferguson is emulating early jazz musicians who didn't limit themselves to a single instrument. Today, jazz is more specialized.
Young musicians tend to be either players or singers, and are seldom both. Will Friedwald.
To me, it's kind of surprising that more trumpet players and trombone players don't sing. You know, I'm sure that more of them could, especially now that the current panorama of jazz is very historically motivated, and there are players out there that work with, you know, jazz from all eras, and you know, sort of the entire history of jazz is available.
Alisa Clancy.
Big bands kind of bit the dust for a while, and that tradition of being a consummate entertainer has sort of been put away, and jazz became very serious. And if you were going to be a singer, then you should just be a singer. And if you're going to be an instrumentalist, then we're just going to... You know, it really goes back to being a craftsperson of jazz, like the New Orleans tradition where these guys had regular day jobs, and then at night they'd go out and play music. So they cultivated singing. Obviously, you cultivate singing because that's part of the entertainment quotient. And now, since you're being marketed with only one instrument, sometimes even if an instrumentalist wants to sing, their record label might say, no, forget it. I mean, I don't know what they're telling people, but it's just not a tradition that's valued anymore, necessarily. You can be one or the other.
Today, two prominent young musicians are carrying on the tradition of the singing instrumentalist. Guitarist John Pizzarelli was inspired to sing jazz after his father, guitarist Bucky Pizzarelli, suggested he listen to Nat King Cole.
As a jazz guitarist, I was looking for material that I could sing to find a voice. And I think that's why Nat King Cole became such an important sound and person in my life, because I heard those records and I heard great jazz and I heard songs that I could sing. It wasn't like Sinatra songs, they were like jazz songs. And it was a good introduction into finding material that I could sing and play. There was more of a jazz element to it. And even as much as Paper Moon, there was a different idea to It's Only a Paper Moon that made it more like, you know, it is only a paper moon. You'd hear that kind of, as opposed to it's witchcraft, da, 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 da. You always heard all those Sinatra things happening. And the Nat Cole idea was, we can sing this song and then we can play great jazz on it. So it had both elements to it.
It is only a paper moon hanging over a cardboard sea. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. It is only a canvas sky hanging over a muslin tree.
And Joey DeFrancesco learned from his father, Hammond B3 player Papa John DeFrancesco.
But watching my dad perform since I was a kid, he sang and he was very entertaining, you know. And I like that. I like to be entertained myself, so I'd like to give people that same thing. People come out to see you and they want to see a show. And of course, I play very serious, hardcore, straight-ahead jazz, but at the same time, I love my audience, and I think it's important that you do perform and give them a show.
Like the early musicians of jazz, John Pizzarelli and Joey DeFrancesco reach out to audiences with their voices as well as their instruments.
There's nothing better than to try to sing a song and move people. And so the marriage of melody and lyric can be anywhere from devastating to, you know, from all those emotions, you know, that's what's so great about it.
My dad and I are very close. We're like best friends. We always been like buddies, you know. And he was playing at a club in Philly one night, and I went down to see him. And I went up to sit in, and I played a couple songs, and, you know, I'm like the big sun star that comes in, you know. And I said, I wanted to sing this to my dad. And this song is called My Buddy. And so I sang it to him, and he started crying. And then the whole place did, and then I couldn't finish it. And that really moved me. And then we did a record together. And that song is on there. And we sang it to each other. And I remember in the studio, when we got finished, the producer of the session said, play something fast, quick.
because everybody had lumps in their throats. And that's what I said, wow, the power of a song, you know, and lyrics.
I miss your voice and the touch of your hand. I long to know that you understand my body. I'm your buddy.
You're my buddy.
Your body misses you.
The history of the singing instrumentalist parallels that of jazz itself. From the earliest pioneers to today's young lions, jazz musicians have enriched their performances by singing. Their voices are extensions of their instruments, and their singing an extra dimension to their music. Whether it's to cause laughter or tears, they have touched people with their voices and their playing. As long as there are musicians who want to connect with audiences, there will be those who want to sing.
You'd be so nice to come home to. You'd be so nice by the fire with a breeze on high, singing a lullaby. You'd be all, baby, I ever could desire.
Jazz in Song, Singing Instrumentalists, was written, produced, and mixed by Joan Merrill and Saraya Muhammad. The executive producer for Jazz Profiles is Tim Owens. Assistant producer, Madeline Smith. The senior producer is Margaret Howes. Our website coordinator, John Murph. Administrative assistant, Linda Browen. Special thanks to KCSM in San Mateo, California, Manoli Wetherill of NPR's New York Bureau, and Leo Del Aguila of NPR's Los Angeles Bureau. To email us, or for more information about this and other programs in our series, contact us through NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org, or check us out at nprjazz.org. Major support for Jazz Profiles comes from the Wallace Reader's Digest Funds, seeking to enrich community life through support of education, the arts, and culture. Additional support has been provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts.
You be so nice, you be like paradise to come home to and love and love. Let's make love.
I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is NPR, where jazz lives.